Good evening.
Good evening, Catherine.
Curtis, you just arrived here in Sitka tonight for Paths Across the Pacific. How are you? Are you wide awake and ready to talk about some beach junk?
Well, actually, I got here yesterday. I flew in through Juneau. It was raining in 42, and I got here, and it was sunny and 70 in Sitka. It was wonderful. I left Seattle, and it was 92, and I was sweaty.
And you've got quite a pile of treasures here sitting on the counter, and we're excited to talk about it and excited to talk about Paths Across the Pacific, which is a 4 or 5 day event going on here in Sitka starting tonight. You're missing the opening ceremonies right now, actually.
Actually, this is it.
This is it. And can you tell me what can people expect if they go to some of the talks at Paths Across the Pacific this week?
Well, you can expect a lot. Basically, we're all about how humans got across the ocean, the Pacific. And some of us believe that they came across mostly in boats along the coast. Others, becoming less and less popular, are those who came across the land bridge. And which, if any of you are out there who are hikers trying to beat your way through a forest versus paddling along the coast, which would you choose? And the easiest answer, easiest way, is along the coast, where there's plenty of food and plenty of shelter, versus slogging through tundra and really tough forests. So a bunch of us just have been working for a long time. This is the 20th year, the 10th Paths Across the Pacific, and slowly we've been assembling probably what really happened.
And you're an oceanographer, and the second wave of your career has been really focused on flotsometrics. Can you, for a listener who doesn't have any clue what that is, and that word sort of intimidates them, can you explain what is flotsometrics?
It's a word I invented, all because my mom asked me. My mother always looked after me very carefully, and she always clipped out things. And if you're an oceanographer chasing ocean currents, your mother always asks you, how can you make money at that? They're like chasing ghosts. And one day she pulled out a newspaper clipping and said, Nike shoes washing up on the Washington coast. And she says, isn't this what you do, son? I said, no, Mom, but I'll look into it. And I did. And I literally put my foot into an unexplored aspect of the ocean. What's actually floating on it is virtually unknown and is not considered a serious discipline in the field of oceanography.
And for listeners who maybe haven't listened to the Flotsam Hour before, can you tell us a little bit about some of your first sort of big discoveries the friendly floaties, for example? Can you tell us a little bit about that?
The first were the Nikes.
The Nikes were first.
First. And Nike gets a green gold star because they helped me crack the code of the sneakers. Each sneaker has its own individual serial number. Mm-hmm. If you give it to me, I will tell you where and when it fell out of a container.
Wow.
And it was Nike that cracked the code. And they spilled 80,000 shoes in five containers in 1990. 90-04-06, 1990, 04 April, 06 June is the code. And thousands of beachcombers sent me shoes. And I made maps and I published scientific articles. And when the article came out in the American Geophysical Union, the press went nuts. I thought I was just doing science, my usual nerdy science. And no, people really took an interest in sneakers floating on the water. So that's listen to your mom. Uh-huh.
And so the sneakers and then the friendly floaties, these were kind of breakthroughs for ocean science and learning about ocean currents, right?
I thought so. I mean, 80,000 individually numbered objects is the largest number ever released at one point on the ocean in the history of ocean science. It was just groundbreaking. I thought so. And so what happened next was in 1992, there was 29,000 turtles, ducks, beavers, and frogs in one container. Again, a huge number of individual objects, but these didn't have numbers, but they were uniquely T. Barry Brazelton designed these. He's the modern-day Dr. Spock, and he designed these toys for kids for their bathtubs. And if you have a little one, You want to have toys that don't sink.
And these float beautifully. You said, in fact, this week you've received four reports of more of these toys washing up on shore.
I received four reports, which Dean gave me three, of toys that have just shown up after almost 25 years, which is incredible. So after 25 years in the environment, these toys are still showing up all over the Northern Hemisphere, from Texas to Scotland, to right next to the Exxon Valdez, to up in the forest, one of the forests around here. So
West Chichikov was where we found one.
Yeah, so it's incredible. So James Bond got it wrong. Diamonds aren't forever. It's plastic is forever.
And what does all this research tell us about the ocean and plastic in the ocean? It's increasing, obviously.
Well, it's so small, it's so particulate that we can't really filter it out.
Mm-hmm.
So we can't go out and get it anymore. The only control we have is to control ourselves. So stop using microbeads. If you Google microbeads, you'll find out that they're so small they go right through sewage treatment plants, and they last forever. Now, whenever serious scientists look at plankton, the base of the food chain, they find little microbeads in their guts. So when a salmon eats those little critters, it's getting salmon and it's getting microbeads in its guts. So almost every creature in the ocean has plastic within it. And when you eat it, you're eating some plastic. So there's no easy way except stop using plastic. And the answer is really easy. We have had green plastic since the 1930s made of grasses and soybeans and so forth. So we know how to do it. It's just we don't have the political will to do it.
And when I was kind of talking to some friends about this show tonight, I had lots of people had questions about plastics in our oceans, and we'll get to some of those in a bit. And this is a call-in show, so please, if you have questions, call us at 747-5877 if you have a question for Curtis and Dean. Maybe you found something when you were doing a little beach combing last weekend and you want to send a picture, then you can post that on our Facebook page and we can show it to them and we can talk about it. Or call us. News director Rob Woolsey is sitting next to the phone right now awaiting your call. So let's get into some of the stuff we have here on the counter. I think the first thing I noticed was this plastic hanging contraption. I've never seen anything like it. What is that?
It's for a really tiny apartment. It hangs from something, and it's about a foot in diameter, and it's for hanging little clothes.
Mm-hmm. It looks like it can hang about 10 outfits on one hanger and a
Dean
circle.
Dean says, Dean, where do you find
well,
them?
Well, yeah, I found this at West Chichikov many years ago, and I brought it to the Beachcombers Fair a few years ago, and one of the persons that attended the fair on Sunday said, oh, yeah, they have those hanging all over in Chinatown.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, Kurt gets information at the Beachcombers Fair just like we do.
Uh-huh.
And so I'll take a picture of that and I'll put it in the Beachcomber Alert newsletter.
And usually you just find, you know, one or two of the arms or the hook or so, and then it's a mystery. Well, what is this? And then I say, well, I know because I have a whole one. And so this is the only whole one I've ever found.
Yeah.
But to see, it seems pretty delicate. It's surprising that it remained intact in its path.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. It's amazing. The ocean has this rough feature, but she's a rough mother. We all come from the ocean, and she washes up things that are exquisitely delicate.
It's amazing the number of light bulbs we find.
Really?
Yeah.
What are some of the other really surprising finds that you think wouldn't have survived, but somehow they magically did?
Well, the tub toys surviving in the ocean for 25 years is a pretty amazing. There's just the toughness of plastic, and yet Mother Nature, she has a gentle side.
Mm-hmm.
So we were born there, and we survived, and maybe for a while longer.
many of the ducks that I've found are broken because the UV attacks them. But in this actually was yellow, when it was first manufactured, and it's all bleached out to be kind of a cream color.
Uh-huh.
The beavers were bright red, and it's all bleached out to become a cream color.
Oh, wow.
And the beavers, and then we have the turtles and the frogs. Those are green and blue, and the UV doesn't attack the turtles in particular, and so I think that the turtles will last a lot longer than the other ones.
Right.
So turtles will be the longest living of the bunch.
And you said that people really prefer the ducks, so it's the beavers, the turtles, and the frogs that are still around.
It's duck bigotry.
Yeah.
Yes, it is. They love the ducks. But that's probably because of Ernie's, but, you know, rubber ducky, you're the one.
Right.
You make
bathtub,
time
lots of fun.
Yeah,
yeah.
See, that's but the other ones, they all have their, like Kermit the green frog. Now, he's mm-hmm. popular. And then there's Myrtle the turtle. Look, there's a book about each one of these.
Sure.
Myrtle the turtle. That's it. So it's really wonderful. And what amazes me is some things that seem so heavy cannot should not float. And there's a shoe last here. It's a yellow shoe last. It's,
yeah.
But what really got my attention was bowling balls float. And I said, it can't possibly be. But when I did the math, yes, bowling balls can float.
That's pretty incredible. Yeah, the shoe last is really heavy. It's a good 5 pounds, and it's just completely solid.
Yeah, so. Yeah. So it's sort of counterintuitive things. If you see a bowling ball on the beach, you say, "Oh, somebody just lost their bowling ball." No, it could have been from the bowling ball firing league. You were in a gun control league or something, and there are groups of people who fire bowling balls from old sewer pipe, and if you put 1 pound of black powder into the end of a 1/8-inch or 1 foot diameter bowling or sewer pipe, it will go a mile.
Whoa.
You can Google it and you can buy your own bowling ball firing gun.
Fascinating hobbies people have. Another thing you pointed out to me, this water bottle that is not, in fact, a water bottle, right here, this tin. What? I don't know. This is made of tin. It looks like a water bottle, but what is it?
It's aluminum. Canister. It's got a red top,
mm-hmm.
and it has to do with bread, wheat. So if you have some wheat from India,
mm-hmm.
and you comes here and you're going to make an exotic bread,
mm-hmm.
You get the wheat. But what comes with the wheat are rodents and rats and cockroaches. But now they're dead. But when the wheat was shipped, they dumped that poison inside the ship into all the holes.
Mm-hmm.
And it killed all the rodents and rats and cockroaches. But when you get it, it's now certified that there's no more than one rat leg per million pounds.
Right.
But it's still there. And so what some people have been doing on board the ships is using the poison and then throwing the empty canister overboard. And it floats.
Mm-hmm.
And I get people at Beachcomber Fair saying, "Kurt, boy, I got a really cool thing here." And they'll pull it out of their satchel and say, "I found this really cool water bottle, and I've been drinking out of it." I said, "You're lucky to be alive."
Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
So there's a lot of dangerous things on the beach, and beachcombing is not all fun and games, but knowledge is survival, and that's an older one.
Mm-hmm. Did you find this one, Dean?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't remember where I found it, but the reason I picked it up is because I get the Beachcomber alert, which Kurt puts out, and it had a picture of a rat poison bottle, and I thought, hey man, this is what he's talking about. So I collected it. Same with the shoe lath. I mean, he featured them in the alert, and so I knew what to look for. And so when I found it, I thought, oh, I found one. All right.
So can you tell me a little bit more about the alert? What is the alert, and how do people use it?
It's about 6,000 words. It comes out every 3 months, and people subscribe. And it is a compilation of everything that beachcombers have told me in the last 3 months. Not everything, but, you know, really cool stuff that you can go find. And so I write it up and publish it and mail it out. It's sometimes I put it on. Sometimes I put it on the internet, but I just liked I like drinking wine with my wife, and we put stamps on things and mail them out, and I'm just old school, I guess. And it's fun.
And then when you get the alert, you look at the patterns and the things he says are out there right now based on certain ocean currents or what other beachcombers are finding, and then you go look.
Then I go out looking. I read what's been found at different places, and then I go out and look and see what I can find, and maybe I'll find something. Like, for instance, last year we started finding these Heinz 57 ketchup bottles. You know, many of them. And so when you find more than one, it's like, this is a spill of some type. Mm-hmm. Okay, and so I get a hold of Kurt. I say, Kurt, I found some Heinz 57 ketchup bottles. Am I the only one? And he says, yeah, I'm sorry, Dean, you're the only one.
No, I'll say, have you put it on your French fries yet? Because one time we found some noodles in half-gallon cans.
Oh.
These are you know, really nice noodles, fresh, crunchy. And we found them in Washington, and, of course, we had to open a can. And, of course, we put our hands in there, and we ate a bunch. And they were very tasty.
Uh-huh.
So
did the ketchup bottle show up full or empty?
No, they were empty.
Oh, okay.
Well, we think it's empty. I don't know.
Yeah, well, it got water in it.
So it you have a lot of fun. I remember when the toys started washing up in Sitka, and people were filling their hot tubs with them because they were washing up by the thousands.
That really stinks.
Oh gosh.
Yeah, that is a. You want to be careful what you open.
Yeah, that's a side effect of the hobby.
It does have an alcoholic smell, doesn't it?
So, what else do we have here? Let's talk about some of these other interesting finds on the counter. What's this sandal?
Lots of footwear washes up. It's a Boltio sandal. We estimate 80,000 were spilled overboard, and the company, the Boltio company, wouldn't tell me. And I had a matching pair, and I wore them. And boy, they're uncomfortable or what?
Where is this from? Boltio? I don't think
I've heard. They're kind of a Panamanian company, but I couldn't tell if it was a front or what exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Best I could tell is they lost a number of containers.
Hmm.
So it's pretty clunky.
And you tend to find right-footed ones on one beach and left on another, and so somehow they separate.
That's true.
Really?
Yeah. I've gotten reports from thousands of people, and I count them. And if you count them on a beach, you find that it's way, way less than 1% chance that it could be a random effect. So the rights go to one beach and the lefts go to another. And that's because no two objects will float the same. The currents will grab them, and the wind will grab them in different ways. And it's so you start like going down a rat hole, I guess. You start saying, well, why would Mother Nature do this? Then you start getting deeper and deeper into it, and you find out, like, skate egg pouches. The mother's skate has two delivery tubes. This is a very primitive animal now.
Uh-huh.
And the right skates and the left skates are shaped differently. And so they're going to go to different places. And you say, well, why would a mother skate do this? And it's, after a while, I said, well, it's survival. If you can produce offspring that are differently shaped and the currents take them to different places, they have a greater chance of survival. And that's it. So Mother Nature, in her infinite wisdom, has reduced women down to one delivery tube.
Mm-hmm.
So you could ask, well, what would it be like if I had two babies and one was a left-handed and one was right-handed?
Uh-huh.
There are all kinds of questions, but the fundamental question is, why does Mother Nature have a left and a right?
Mm-hmm.
And it hasn't been satisfactorily answered.
What are some of the other questions you're looking to answer with your research, the big questions?
The big questions are, it has to do with life itself. I mean, we come from the ocean, and you say, well, humans are almost exactly the density of seawater. Okay, well, we come from seawater, but that makes sense. If you kill somebody and throw them in the water, there's a 50% chance they'll float.
Mm-hmm.
So the perfect murder is to kill somebody that's a sinker. Now, all your readers must know if they're a sinker or a floater. So all you sinkers out there, be careful. So there are questions like that, and the answers are pretty murky. It's very poorly known what the specific gravity of a human body is. Mm-hmm. So that's why is that? And then you ask the question, well, what are the deeper implications of us originating in the ocean? How do our personalities reflect the ocean? And that's where I'm at.
Hmm. Any answers yet?
Yeah, actually, I do have answers, and I'll put it in another book. I'm finishing another book. So.
Oh, great.
So the last one was Flotsometrics, and it ended with Music in the Ocean.
Mm-hmm.
This next one begins with Music in the Ocean and ends with the afterlife.
Oh, wow.
And it all comes from the ocean.
And I want to switch to some listener questions now. I have a few written down from earlier today. Some people who are asking about plastics in the ocean. Joe asked, what's the most dangerous garbage for marine life? If she just has a little bit of time and wants to go down to the beach and pick up some flotsam, what should she focus on? What should she look for to get off the beach?
I'd have to say plastic. If you go to the beach, get a bag of plastic off the beach. So always have in your pocket.
Well, what I found is that the most common thing to find are water bottles. And I'm not saying that they're the worst, but when I go beachcombing, water bottles are everywhere. They're the most popular, popular plastic that you run into. But as far as what to get out of the environment, there's these big white styrofoam floats that came over from the Japanese tsunami.
Fukushima?
Yeah, there's lots of those around, and the sun degrades them, and they fall apart in a hurry. And if I were to pick one object to get out of the water, I would pick that because that's a huge volume of plastic. And generally, what I do when I find some is I chuck it up in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
So now I'm sure those little beads that they're made of aren't very dense, but they eventually break down into very small pieces and that's bad, but they're easy to get out of the way because they're so big.
And that's a good one.
Mm-hmm.
They're bulky and really they need to be thrown up on the beach so the ocean can't have them anymore. And then on the other end, like in your toothpaste, you'll find microbeads,
mm-hmm.
and those go right when you brush your teeth and spit down the drain. Those little blue microbeads go right through sewage treatment plants, and you can't get those off the beach. So there's things on the beach you cannot get, and there's things you can get. So the answer is do what you can. Yeah. And water bottles are about the most ubiquitous thing. So get those off the beach.
What's so curious about the water bottles, and what Tyler and I have done, is we've picked up water bottles. They all seem to have tops on them. And it's like, why do people drink water and put the top back? I mean, why wouldn't you throw it on the ground and then throw the bottle, I mean, it's just, why do you put them back together? But I think I found very few open bottles. In fact, so what we started doing, just for the heck of it, is to take the top off the bottle and put it in a bag and collect all the different brands of water bottle that are out there. And, we did it for 2 years and made two bags. There are bags, maybe a cubic foot, of bottle caps, all different. If they were the same, we didn't pick them up.
Uh-huh.
So anyway, it's just curious that there are a huge variety of different types, and all these water bottles have tops on them.
If you want to know what floats in the ocean, and look at the recycle codes in the little triangles, there's 2, 4, 5 are the ones that float. So if you have a piece of plastic in your hand, you turn it over, and if it's a 2, 4, or 5, you really want to get that off the ocean, off the water, because it's going to float.
Now I'm just thinking, as you're telling me about the things you've collected, what does a beachcomber's house look like? What are you doing with all the things you find? Are you finding creative uses for them?
Well, actually, I mean, I've been collecting junk for a long time. And we're building a new house, and I'm not allowed to take any of it along. So well, it's getting chucked.
Well, I have a basement full of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So it varies all over the place. Some people, I've seen whole houses full. I've seen fences outside that go around people's houses, and they hang all the plastic floats out there. You name it. I've been down to Florida where the backyard is full of rocket parts. You're not supposed to have them. But
sure.
I'm here to tell you that there's. I could take you to some places that are full of. It looks like a boneyard. It's just all these old aluminum parts that are sticking out of the ground.
Stuff that's washed up from Cape Canaveral.
Yeah, lots of the rockets look nice and surgical. NASA likes to have the image of being white and surgical.
Mm-hmm.
The launching rockets is really messy business.
Oh, wow.
Even the new Falcons, the pieces wash all over the planet. When you have the GPS phones, each one of those, your GPS phones requires 26 individual satellites circling the Earth. And each one of those has 8 rockets that launch up. And each rocket has a plug in it that's 3 foot in diameter and 3 inches thick and weighs 50 pounds. So when you have a rocket launch, you have, you know, dozens of big plastic plugs that are washing out there. So the space is another garbage patch, only it circles the planet. So so when I see a rocket launch, I say, what's all the junk that I can find?
Well, I always tell people as a beachcomber, if you find it on the beach, it's a treasure. But if you find it at the dump, it's garbage.
It depends. I will beg to differ. A friend of mine was up in Ketchikan, and she had a half hour, and she went into the dump at Ketchikan, not far from, I guess, the ferry, and she found a skull.
A human
skull. And in it was a golden mandible.
Hmm.
It probably dates from the 1890s, but it's the jaw of the mandible had the crown, you know, the 4 false teeth, then they were solid gold.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I took it to my dentist, the picture. And he says, I don't have a clue, but that's really old.